The 2018 Ig Nobel Prizes were awarded last night at Harvard University. They're given every year for scientific achievements that first make people laugh and then make them think. Mark Abrams, editor of the Annals of Improbable Research and Master of Ceremonies for the 28th First Annual Ig Nobel Prize Ceremony, joins us now. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, hi. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join us. First, tell us about the Ig Nobel Prizes. What are the awards?
Well, they are prizes. We give 10 of them a year, and they're for something unusual. They're for things that make people laugh and then think. These are real things, all kinds of things, many of them scientific, many other things. But the one thing about all of them is that they make you laugh when you first hear about it, then they stick in your head, and even a few days later, probably all you want to do is tell your friends about them.
I understand, because I watched them last night. I streamed them live.
Thank you.
And the very first thing was the roller coaster. And I have been thinking about that all day today.
I bet you have. I should describe for everyone listening what this is about.
Yeah.
One of the prizes went to a pair of doctors who, this is the Ig Nobel Medicine Prize. These two doctors used roller coaster rides to try to hasten the passage of kidney stones.
And I can see how that might work.
Yeah. Might is an important word here. They don't guarantee that it works, but in their experience, they say it helps sometimes.
But the jerkiness and the up and down, I can see where that might work.
Yeah. Have you ever had a kidney stone yourself?
I have not. So Improbable Research is the name of your group. Tell us how you started with that.
Yeah. Well, the magazine is the Annals of Improbable Research. I'm the editor. And back in 1990, when I started walking around in this world, I was suddenly meeting all kinds of people who'd done things like this that were hard to put in any kind of category. But I kept thinking, these things, anybody would want to know about these. And most of the people who did these things, they're going to go their whole life, and nobody will ever know they did it. And that's wrong. It's a shame. Somebody should do something. So I talked about it to people, and a bunch of us got together, and we started this this ceremony. The first 4 years, it was at MIT, a big engineering school here in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and then we moved it down the road the fifth year to Harvard University. And it's become kind of a big thing around the world. We invite the winners. The winners, by the way, we offer them the prize quietly and let them say no if they want to, but almost all of them say yes, and then they come to the ceremony. We also get a bunch of Nobel Prize winners at the ceremony. We shake the hands of the winners. It's televised live. We kind of invented webcasting back in 1995 for the ceremony that year, and it just keeps growing and growing.
So how do you get your winners, and how many applicants are there?
Oh, boy. Well, we're always looking. We use a big group, mostly of volunteers around the world. Most of what we learn about, and that's a lot, a typical year we get 9,000 or so new nominations. Most of those are people all over the place sending in nominations about things they know about, things they read about. 10 or 20% of them every year are people sending in nominations for themselves. Well, the people who nominate themselves almost never win. It's a funny kind of prize. If you're trying to win one of these prizes, you're almost certainly going to fail. This quality of making people laugh and think is something that seems to be an accident, a side effect.
It's something that just happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes the people don't even realize that what they've done is funny to everybody else. An example of that is, about 15 years ago, I think, we gave one of the prizes to a team of scientists in Australia. They had published a scientific research paper called An Analysis of the Forces Required to Drag Sheep Across Various Surfaces. An analysis of the forces required to drag sheep across various surfaces. And when we offered them the prize, they were delighted. But it was only in that phone call that they realized that what they'd done probably looks pretty funny to anybody who doesn't live in a part of Australia where sheep is a big industry.
Sure, because it sounds pretty funny to me.
Yeah, in that particular case, well, sheep is the big industry, and it's a big industry there. Periodically, they take thousands of sheep, gather them into one big building, and they have a lot of people with big electric clippers shearing the wool, and they have to move the sheep from this part of the building to that part of the building. But sheep don't always move where you want them to. And they have to drag the sheep around.
Wow.
They always thought every year there's a lot of injuries to the people doing this and to the sheep, and the people who run this were convinced they're probably also losing a lot of money every year. So they asked a bunch of scientists to come spend time here, look at what we're doing, and tell us if there's anything we can improve. And the scientists did. That was their report, what they found. And what they said is that, strange as it seems, one of their big discoveries is that it's easier to drag a sheep downhill, not uphill.
I bet it is.
It is. And yet in a lot of these buildings, they were every day trying to drag lots and lots of sheep uphill and not even realizing they were doing it.
Sure. So there really are things that come out of the research for these awards that are useful.
Sometimes, yeah, and some are not. But a lot of them, it's really hard to tell. And as with any discovery in science or anything else, maybe you've also seen this on any little or big thing you invented, even for your own use. Sometimes you just kind of put something together, and it's a long time before you realize, hey, this is useful. And then other people realize it's useful, and enough of that happens, and a lot of people start to use it, and then if a lot of people start selling it and losing money, then people stop laughing at it. And mm-hmm. it's no longer a funny story officially. Now, from that point on, it's important. It's so giving prizes for things that strike people as kind of unthinkable, and so it's funny because you never thought about it. That says nothing at all about whether the thing is important or not.
So let's talk more about the award ceremony last night.
Yeah.
I was very impressed. It wasn't all that long, but you had 10 awards that you gave out. You had a theme of the heart, so you had some entertainment in between the awards.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know the little girl that was the timekeeper, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. How do you get that job? Who chooses her?
Well, everything you said really fits together.
Uh-huh.
The ceremony wasn't very long. It was 90 minutes long. But the amount of people and the amount of stuff that happened there,
yeah.
If we did it at any normal pace, it would be many, many hours long. So we work really hard to engineer this evening. So everything is going to happen just. One of the most important things is we got a lot of people who are going to give speeches, 10 new winners, plus a whole bunch of other people. And we tell everybody, keep your speech really short. But, of course, that never works. Everybody knows the problem. The Academy Award ceremonies that drag on. Everything else you've ever had to go through in your life, the speeches drag on. And we found a way to solve that. So every year we go out and we find an 8-year-old girl. But the unusual kind of 8-year-old kid who has ice water in his thing. She's on stage the whole time. I introduce her at the start of the night. And I explain whenever she feels that somebody's talked long enough, she will let them know. What she does is after somebody talks, and the longest speeches of the night are about 1 minute. After about a minute, if somebody's still talking, this little girl stands up, walks across the stage, goes up to the person who's talking, looks up at that person and says, please stop. I'm bored. Please stop. I'm bored. Please stop. I'm bored. Please stop. I'm bored. She doesn't stop until they do. We have never seen an adult human being who can withstand that kind of greeting from a powerful 8-year-old child.
That's right. And you have so much jam-packed into that award ceremony that, you know, I'm sure you had to do something like that. And it's very funny when she does it.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of other little stuff. If you watch the ceremony, the video of the whole ceremony is up now on our website, on improbable.com. You can see her in action. And if you really pay attention, you can see an awful lot of things that are happening in front of you that make everything move fast. You know, this part of the way we put this whole ceremony together every year is all of us. It's our revenge for having to have to sit through years and years of school and work and public events where once you sit down in the audience, you're trapped while those people up there drone on and on. We want to make sure that never happens at the Ig Nobel ceremony.
Well, I don't think anybody was bored at the ceremony last night.
Let's
talk about some of the highlights. Do you have any personal favorites from the awards last night?
Oh, boy. I like all of them. And I was meeting all the winners for the first time. They all flew in from, the winners were this year from 6 different continents. So they were all arriving in the hours before the ceremony. I'll mention a few of them here.
Yeah.
One of the prizes went to a team from a bunch of countries, Sweden, Romania, Denmark, the Netherlands, Germany, Indonesia, Italy. And this team won a prize for collecting evidence in a zoo that chimpanzees imitate humans about as often and about as well as humans imitate chimpanzees.
We were laughing about that one last night.
Yeah.
Now tell me what the importance of that would be.
Well, all these things is hard to say. I can tell you what it might be, but that doesn't necessarily tell you what it is. And as you and I were discussing a little before, when something's new, it's hard sometimes to see whether it really is important or not. Often that just comes out later over time. So the question, it matters at the start, but it doesn't. You can't really answer that. But if it raises a question and gets you wondering about something, you know, maybe that by itself is kind of important.
Hmm. And how about that Peace Award for Spain and Colombia?
Oh, yeah. Peace Award was from a big team of scientists in Spain. Also, one of them is from Colombia. These scientists measured the frequency, the motivation, and the effect of shouting and cursing while driving an automobile.
Mm-hmm. I know people who shout and curse when they drive an automobile, especially if they're in traffic.
In Minnesota?
Yeah, even in Minnesota.
There are people who shout and curse while driving an automobile in Minnesota?
Hard to believe, isn't it?
I'm on the East Coast. You are shattering all of my illusions.
We hardly ever honk our horn, though.
No, but I bet the shouting and cursing is polite, at least in the ears of people from other places like me.
And, you know, here's another one of my favorite, the Economics Award.
Oh, yeah, that's a bunch of scientists in Canada, and some of them are from China as well. They won a prize for investigating whether it's effective for employees to use voodoo dolls to retaliate against abusive bosses.
Now, I think that's just hilarious.
Yeah. And when you saw the speech, you probably saw the leader of that team explain that they think it probably is pretty important for a lot of people. But what they found was that when people in that situation who have reached the boiling point where they're ready to go in and scream at their boss, if instead of running in and screaming at their boss, they first sit down and stick pins in a voodoo doll.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, that calms the person down enough that, okay, now they don't feel the need to go in and scream at their boss and get fired.
It's probably a more fun way to calm down than taking a deep breath or counting to 10.
Yeah, and if you happen to be a person who believes in voodoo, this even a more effective way.
Probably is just, even more effective. Just,
yeah, more effective than doing the Minnesota thing of shouting and cursing at your boss.
That's right. So the scientists only got to speak for 60 minutes or until the little girl told them that was, or 60 seconds, I'm sorry, or until she was bored.
Right.
So what happens next for all of these scientists? Do they have an opportunity?
Oh, yeah, a few things. Well, for one thing, right now, all of them are getting lots and lots of phone calls from reporters in their own country and reporters from around the world. So they're all pretty busy right now. A lot of people are starting to read the published papers, the scientific reports, which often are not easy to read, but these ones are interesting. And then tomorrow, on Saturday, all the new winners will come to MIT here in Cambridge. And in the afternoon, we have free public lectures for anybody who wants to come. And there, each of the new winners, instead of just 1 minute, they get 5 whole minutes to explain what they're doing and show pictures if they want. 5 minutes turns out to be a pretty good amount of time for anybody who wants to explain anything to another person. In 5 minutes, if you know you only have 5 minutes to talk, almost everybody really concentrates beforehand and figures out, okay, here's how I can tell a good story. And then the audience gets to ask them questions, too. So that's really nice. And then that night, tomorrow night, Saturday night, when all the official stuff is done, then we have a nice party for all the winners and all the people who put the ceremony together.
Wonderful. It sounds great. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us, Mark. Where can people go to get more information?
If you go to our website, improbable.com, you can see a list of all the winners and see how to find their work. And when I get a little more free time, I'll put up links directly to them. And to, there's video of the whole ceremony. And tomorrow on Saturday, if you go there, you can also watch live. We're gonna webcast the lectures in the afternoon. It starts at 1 o'clock Eastern time, so I guess at noon your time. And then there's my magazine. I hope people subscribe to the Annals of Improbable Research. You can get at that from the website too.
Wonderful. And that website again is www.improbable.com.
Yep. And thank you for repeating that. I appreciate that, Chris.
You bet. We've been speaking with Mark Abrams, editor of the Annals of Improbable Research. He was also the master of ceremonies for the 28th first annual Ig Nobel Prize ceremony that was last night at Harvard. Thanks so much for joining us, Mark. And could you let us go with the closing ceremony with the traditional closing statement?
Yep. The last thing I say in the ceremony every year, the same thing. This is to the audience and to all the people on stage. If you did not win an Ig Nobel Prize this year, and especially if you did, better luck next year.
Better luck next year. Thank you so much for joining us, Mark.
You're welcome.